Grease the organs. Tell me when it starts now. This is about the same the boys bring in there. Yeah. Not so sweet, this isn't so sweet. Theirs is a kind of sweet.
I like it this way.
Yeah, you are not right with that, because the other gets sweet and they drink too much,
yeah,
and
no.
The first thing you're talking. We don't eat them all till I get through.
Yeah.
I can't talk them.
It isn't fair.
Joe, where did you live in England?
Blackburn, Lancashire.
What did your father do there?
He was the forester in a big estate, a gentleman's estate. Woodman, the head woodman.
And
he had a lot of gain from there too. I was out of work one time and I worked with him for, I don't know, a short time, a few months, and then I knew how to use an axe and saw. My brother worked there, my older brother worked with him too, and he, that's where he had some idea about using axe and saw. That's why when we got to the United States, we went to California in the lumber camps, which is my idea about it then.
What kind of training did you get in England?
Training?
Yes, schooling.
Well, you go to school, I must have gone about 4 years of age. It wasn't the kind of kid school here, was there, not same as what you have got, Head Start? There was no Head Start there. Well, I went about 4 and finished at about 10 and a half or 11.
And then you were you became an apprentice?
Oh, no, you just go to work.
Yes.
I got a job there. Do you know that you could go half-time in England? You could go to school half-time and go to work at the mills the other half? That is, for a while. It was after I left this, they started forcing them to go until they were 16. But when I was there, I quit at 11 and went to work.
What kind of work?
In the garden. Well, they're selling they're growing things and selling them.
Vegetables, produce, flowers.
Yeah, and plants. And I go there and I work there, get up, be there at 6 o'clock in the morning. You've got to walk 3 hours to get there, 3 hours to get home. You get $1.50 a week for that. First till 4 o'clock on Saturday. But like all kids, I was hard to get out of bed. Like the kids here, and I just before I get to there, I can hear the old bell ringing. They ring a bell, you know, and I know that I'm probably 200 or 300 yards away. And then I've got to sit on the bench and wait till breakfast time, and yet have a quarter knocked off.
At that time, you had no idea of coming to the United States.
Oh, Alaska! I didn't even read about it. No, then I used to read about the Indian stories in the States, but I never heard of Alaska. No.
So you just worked as a gardener?
Alaska didn't enter my head until I was right in California, and then it was on the spur of the moment. But I got to get to the United States first. That was a kind of funny how I got here too.
Joe, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I've got 2 brothers and 1 sister, 4 of us all together. And I'm the kid, I'm the young one.
You're the youngest.
The child.
Well, how did you come to the United States?
Well, that was funny. I have no idea about that, and I happened to be out of work at the time, too. Of course, didn't have the money, because I never figured about the future. Tomorrow didn't mean nothing to me, just lots of fun. The theaters, the dancing, and the girls, and the clubs, and football, and just tomorrow was nothing. So one time I was out of work, too. Got fired. I was quarreling with the butler, and I was threatened to beat him. Whether I could or not, I wouldn't know. But I got fired for that. The gentleman, they call him, didn't listen to my side of the story, but listened to the butler's, and I got let out. And nothing. Empty pocket, too. And, you better not tell you.
No, Joe, you go right ahead.
Forget that. Anyway, I was a chum with a boy. We're going around at night, meeting, you know, same as you meet a regular friend. And one night he said, I'm going to go to the States. Gee, that's a... He hadn't even mentioned it before. Straight out of the blue, I wouldn't know about that. Gee, I'm sorry, I said. I'm very sorry to he's a nice fellow, you know. Well, he said, I want you to go with me. And I didn't have a 5-cent piece. In fact, I was away in debt. Well, I thought that was a joke, but a poor one. And then, he wanted to... pay everything until I get to the States, and then I can pay him back. So, what do I want? Nothing to lose. Of course, I said, all right. So, but here, I'd already applied to the police force and to the fire brigade for a job. And the first letter I got in the United States was from the police force. If I'd have stayed in England another week, I'd have been a bobby. I've been examined, physically examined, everything was all right. The first letter I had. But I come to the States with Jack. I thought we was going farming, you know. I didn't know what we was going to do. He was going and I was going with him. That's all. We did go out to some place out in the country, but I had nothing to say. Jack was there, one minute. So for some reason he didn't want the farming business. And then he go to Council Bluffs. He must have had a friend there. See, I didn't know nothing. Come to Council Bluffs, and it looks like he was looking for a job and I was. Well, the first day, there's some hot houses there, green houses. I go and get a job the first day. And Jack was a good man. He got to work in Omaha. He's a good carpenter. Well, I worked there, about a month, maybe 2 or 3 months. And my brother landed in Canada, and he had bad luck. He'd been had an accident and was out of luck. And Jack loaned me the money to send and get him too, so you can understand what kind of a boy Jack was. And Jack was a clever, ambitious boy, and he must have had a lot of money, and I was just exactly opposite, just a no goods. How we got together, I wouldn't know, just exactly opposite. So my brother come and we thought we'd like to, he wasn't paying much wages. And the man we was working for, he was disappointed because that was our business, was gardening in the old country. And he wanted us, we was going to give us sections there. But there wasn't much money, there was advertising for men in California, in the lumber camps. And both of us had had a little experience with my father, you see, not much, but some. So we went to California, to the lumber camps.
Well, how old were you then? How old were you then?
Oh, I must have been, 18 or 19, I guess. And then we got work there straight away. Both of us knew something about it, and we worked there. We was lucky there too. We was working at one lumber camp, and the lumber camp shut down in October on account of too much water. And my brother, for some reason, he went out to another camp that was just building a camp, and we both got a job there and worked all winter. Lucky again. And there was a little river, Redwood Company. So I owed Jack this money yet, you know. But I go down, a lot of the men go to town and to go on Saturday night, come back on Monday morning, and this is what they had to come back to and nothing else. I know one man lived with us, all he had for his week's wages was a bottle. Fine fella too. But anyway, we go down to the fishing and get a lunch, and then I could send Jack my check, each without spending any. I wanted to pay him as quick as I could. And I told, I never knew how much I did owe him. I never knew how much. But I must have known at the finish, because I owed him $60-some. And I sent him $70, just a few extra dollars, because I never paid anything extra. And he sent that back right to a penny stamp. And I know, because I took that money and got measured for a pair of boots. You get measured for boots there, lumberjack boots. So that's straightened up with him that way. Then from there, my brother went down and got a job in the gardens. A gentleman estate, we keep calling them, gentlemen. Well, I was working there, and a young Scotchman worked with me, just a boy, and his brother worked at a neighboring place and would come up to visit his brother. So we got acquainted that way. And at this place, there's a Charlie, a big Swede. He said he's going to Alaska. So Scotty said, "How about us going too?" Just like that. Well, all right. So we come to Alaska. And I think we made it about the cheapest anybody could make it from San Francisco. We come up for steerage on the boat, about $10, I think, from there to Skagway, and then we walk over the pass. We was lucky, this Swede, we had a little basket, you know, contained everything out in the world, and Scotty had something, and the Swede took it on the train. He went on the train, he did, while we was walking. We didn't have too much money, so we walked over this pass. It's 110 miles, I think, takes us 3 days. And my rations there, I was traveling light. I had one summer sausage, I remember these well, one loaf of bread, and half a blanket. I was traveling light. I figured if you were going to walk, you don't want no pack. And I see that. I see other boys start with all the everything they had in the world, and they'd be dumped before they'd gone many miles. Well, anyway, you get a lunch someplace. There's a kind of a stopping place, and you've got a lunch there. And Scotty played out there. We helped him down there, and that was lucky again for me. Because when Charlie took our luggage, got to Whitehorse, Charlie got on the same train and went back again. That's all of the last we ever saw. And that's the fellas really we went, just caused us to go. So Scotty got there and could attend to the luggage, see? But I said, Dr. Bielicker. Then I got to Whitehorse while Scotty was out there fishing someplace on the rapids, I think. Well, from there, oh, there's a bunch of us crossed there, all nationalities, and we got talking together. We met people walking over the trail, going back. They'd been to Dawson and out of work, no work in Dawson, and they was going back, so that wasn't encouraging to us. We was going to Dawson. Well, we got there, and there's an old lady there running a roadhouse, so she said, why don't you fellas get on a boat and drift down, you'll get something. Look for us, so we did. It was there was a bunch of us, probably 20 or 30 there, and we picked out, you know, the boys what wanted to go. It was myself, English, George the Scotchman, Chips the Switzer from Switzerland, an American, a Norwegian, and a Romanian. That was got on that boat. We put together about $35, you'll buy one of them square end boats, and a few dollars of food. But we could stop on the way down and buy a little to eat. So we started down to Dawson. Well, we got to about 2 miles above Dawson. We tied the boat up and took a walk in to see how Dawson looks. Well, there's some old cabins in front there. No doors, no windows, no nothing, just old places. And anyway, we went back and got the boat and moved right into there. And went to one of them houses, the cabins, on the riverbank, deserted. And the Salvation Army was feeding about 100 people there. They play the tambourine, you know, and then off they go, and they line up behind there, and up to the, well, where, you know, the Salvation Army barracks. And we could go too, but I guess we might have got a few dollars yet. Well, that same day, we landed that day and was maybe stayed in that cabin that night, I don't know. Up on the hillside, there's a lot of greenhouses. Well, I don't know, nothing else to do, so I went up there and asked this guy if he wants a man. Why, yes. The first job I asked for, and that's the $75 a month is the most money I'd ever had in my life. In a job the first day. And these guys sitting around, Salvation Army feeding them. Well, whether it's because that was my business or not, I don't know. Anyway, got the job. Well, we worked there. Scotty, my partner, he laid around a little while, and he went out to the creeks and he got a job. And in the meantime, a man called, we call him Old Freddy, come down with somebody. And he and Chips went down to Cold Creek, got a job down Cold Creek. Chips was a carpenter and Fred was a laborer or something. And they stayed there all summer. Then in the fall, I didn't know what was going to do, you know. I didn't know what was, these boys come to where I was working and asked me, would I go prospecting with them? Well, of course. But, and then they go up and get Scotty, who was working up the river for Chicken Billy and digging spuds. And got Scotty, and Scotty's willing to go, but the other thing, when I want my wages, I can't have them. He's crooked and was known to be crooked with wages. I didn't know at the time. He said, I got to give him a month's notice. Well, if I give him a month's notice, I can't go any place. And he wouldn't pay me the wages, and I needed it. So I went to court about that, and I was my own lawyer. And here I did about that. Scotty had already worked for him. See, while I was working there, I got Scotty a job working for him too. But there was no arrangements made, so I told Scotty, the court was just full of people to listen to this because they knew this guy was a crook, you know. Paddock his name was. I called Scotty for witness and I said, here, and this was arranged beforehand, I'll ask you, what conditions did you hire to Mr. Paddock? And you will say that you were hired out the same as I did. that you could quit when you want and you can fire when you want. Of course, he never done that. So that it was an old Irishman that judged there. Well, he said, Mr. Paddock, he says, the weight of evidence is against you. You will have to pay him. And I didn't know if I was going to get it then, but I went up on the Saturday to get the money and to get my wages, and the judge, I went to his house, he said he hasn't paid yet, but he's going to, because he come and collected. He was supplying them with vegetables. He comes, so I think he's going. So I did get the money. And, well, we got to bought a boat and started down to go back to prospecting. Oh boy. Yeah. And we were going prospecting, we was going up to the Porcupine. Why the Porcupine? I think one of these guys had heard there was something around. I don't know, somebody. But we was going to go there and run up in the mountains and prospect. Well, you've got to get up there, so you can't on the flats. Well, we didn't have the least idea about prospecting, not the least. Well, I told you about that. Stop that a minute. Didn't I tell you? You know, we got, as I told you, we got the Shubin house and it was occupied there. And that's how I got let out. But I got a wonderful, we call them characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't have characters as in England for a gardener, you just don't get no place. And that's reasonable too. Because now, like where I was working, see where I got let out with this, the head gardener, he goes on a vacation, 2 or 3 weeks. Now, I was the foreman there. Well, I've got to go in the house and take flowers, plants all over that house in the morning when there's nobody around any of the servants. You've got to be trustworthy, don't you see? In a house like that, you've got to have a good reputation. And if you don't have them, if you apply for a job, you've got to say, I've got 3 of them down there. If you don't have that, well, you don't get a job, that's all. They can't have anybody running around a big house like that. So I had good characters, to call them. But when he fired me for quarreling with this butler, well, I didn't expect him to give me a character. I didn't ask him. But the head gardener did. And a wonderful, I can show it to you, a wonderful, I have 3 good characters. But it was funny. When I come to the States, you know, I had them, I've got them here now. I go and ask for this job, you know, and this is where I see the archaeologist. And I said, I've got some, I want, I thought I've got all my characters, I'm going to show them. And he says, we don't need them. He says, it's just what you can do. He didn't want characters there, but they would be the gentleman's place too. That's just a, well,
Joe, the first year you were here, you stayed on the Porcupine River.
Yeah.
But then you went back to Circle to...
Wait a minute. Yeah. I had, in my travels around from them lumber camps, I was gone from one camp, was going into town, me and Bill, I don't know his other name. He went to visit some friends in a little village, and we stayed in the hotel that night, and there was just one man there, an elderly man, and I sat up with him that night, and Bill went to bed, I guess, and anyway, this man was out prospecting, just fooling around until summer, and this man had found a lot of gold down in South America. Somehow I forget the place down South America. And the natives come and driven them out and took everything they had. So he was going to get about 20 men, well armed, and was going to go down there. I said, how about going with you? Well, fine. It was nothing crooked because you find everything for yourself, see. So we went up to work at Circle, out at the creeks there. And while I was out there, I had a letter from this man while I was early, that he was going to let me know later when he was going to go. Well, Scotty, my partner, had gone up to Dawson to get an outfit. Old Fred was out with me working on the creeks. When I didn't get this letter from that old man, Scotty and Fred had gone together, which left me holding the bag, you call it, with nothing. So I come to town waiting for this letter, don't get no letter. I find out later that this old man died. The man might have been in South America instead of here, and dead. Anyway, I get to Circle. Well, a man had been working at the same place, a little Frenchman. He was a prospector and was going prospecting. How about going with me? He said. Well, I said, sure. So we went up to Weber Creek, got on an outfit, went up to Weber Creek and started prospecting. And I had one winter, which was plenty. We built five cabins, sunk six holes, two of them 40 foot deep, all by wood fires, you know, and everything you pack it on your back. Five cabins and put the roof on another one. And, well, that's all. You've got nothing for it, a few colors. So we come back to the, we lived with old Weber there. He was an old man that lived there. And well, from there he lent his little sled about this big, and everything we had in the world would go on there easy enough. And we pulled this sled down to Circle and went out to the creeks to work. When we went out there to work, Scotty and old Fred had gone up to our camp. But some men from Dan Ruby had come up there, camp near us, and Scotty went down to Ruby with them, which left old Fred there. Old Fred come out to the creeks, worked there, and we both worked together. So that's how I got back up there again. If Scotty went away, and I went back with Fred. Fred, he got a job. But that was on bedrock. You don't get paid unless they take the money. Well, I got wages, so when he was through, they didn't find the money, so Fred didn't get nothing. So I put up the outfit for Fred and myself. I was going to boast about this. You're not hearing me on there, but that's why I got a job there. Stop that a minute. Well,
you went up on the creeks. Where were the creeks, Joe?
We go to Circle and walk out 50 miles, Mastigan. The creeks start from there. The Miller Roadhouse is right there. And that's where the people go and live there, and then from there they go up the creeks looking for a job.
And you went out there with Fred?
Me and Fred walked out there. Because he'd come from, I was in Circle through prospecting. Fred come from where he was shopping, come up there to Circle to go out looking for a job. So we would both meet there and go out looking for this job. Well, Fred went up and he got a job, but it was on bedrock, where you get paid if you take out the money. And I said, there's a lot of men there looking for work.
You were working for wages.
Yes, all right. We were working for wages. I think we got 50 cents an hour. And we worked 12 hours a day. So we'd go up and get a job. I'm working for Pete Anderson. I got a job there. And Fred got a job on bedrock. So I'm working in what they call in the cut, wheeling in, and they wheel that in the, drop it in the dump box there, and they hoist it up and drop it in the, anyway,
they drop it into the hopper?
No. So long.
The shaker?
Well, anyway, they drop it up there.
The tunnel.
Just wait a minute, let me get this word. We better stop in a minute. Put it in the dump box. That's hoisted up and dropped in the, where the water washes it out. The water then runs over there and washes the gold goes in the ripples. Well, that's a very hard job with a long handled fork, and then boys, when they're in the corner filling the wheelbarrow, they fill it quick. Any rocker they can lift, they put in there. And you've got to lift that out with a long handled fork and a strong current running over it. But anyway, I saw this little Frenchman, not so little. He quit, he worked half a day and he quit. He put another man in, he worked 2 hours there and he quit. So then Pete, I was working down there, and Pete said, "Nice man, this Pete, boss." He said, "Would I like to go up there and try that?" Well, I said, "Yes, if I can go back in the cut, if I can't make it." He said, "Sure." So I went up there and worked in the dump box. I worked in there, and it was all right. I worked there till everything was over. Cut through the winter, through for the fall. Put in till they shut down. So Pete told me if I want a job next year, why, come along. Well, I wanted a job next year. And I come along, and there were all these guys out of work again, went down the roadhouse. I didn't think as I would get anything. But I take a trip up there anyway, and I asked Pete, "Don't suppose you want anybody?" Oh, he says, "Bring the bedding up in the morning, we can always stand an extra one." So I put in the summer there. You put in the whole summer there, and you're $400 when you get through. A good, hard 12 hours a day. And here you go out fighting fire, and you make that in a week.
Yeah.
Joe. Where is Rubber Creek? Where is Rubber Creek?
Rubber Creek is 40 miles above Circle.
That's close to Woodchopper?
It's the first creek on the above Circle on the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. We go up on the steamboat from Circle. We get our outfit and go up on the steamboat there.
So how many years did you work on the creeks?
I think twice.
Twice?
Yeah. Well, I was going out again, but there's a man started a farm out at what at the ferry, about way across the river, the birch creek there, and two of us going out, and this guy asked us if we'd like to stay there and work. It wasn't quite so much as the creek, but it was steady and easier, so the other guy didn't want it, so I took that job and worked all summer there.
What was the fellow's name with the farm?
Rigger. His name was Rigger. And I got quite a lot of experience whip sawing. We whip sawed a lot of lumber up at our camp. And he was building a big silo. And we get the logs and we build it to 20 foot square, and we would put these logs up, and I'd whip them through with this whip saw myself. And you see, I've had lots of experience of that job. And we built this silo, and we used to get cattle in that fall. We fill that with hay. You know about that? Well, we would go up the river to some hay field, and he cut that and drag it to the river and throw it in the river and let it drift down. And have a beam down there, and that catches it. But some of it was going to miss one time, so I went out there to stop it. And I had $100 bill in my pocket, and that just lifted out and went down the river. We went to look for it, and that's all the money I had, I guess, or not much else. We went to look for it, but it was gone.
Is this farmer the same man that used to feed his pigs on
fish? That's the one. He had no pigs, but now he's dead, you see. He didn't have no livestock, just a horse. But his wife was a worker. Me and Mrs. Lily would go out there and set plank spuds and just better than most men. He was growing vegetables and took them out to the creeks to sell it to the people out at the creeks. While he was doing that, Fred got fired up at the creeks, and they come down and they got him a job taking this wagon and horse and selling vegetables up on the creek. Quite nice too, the lady, she got my big box of cranberries she gathered and gave me then. I could have stayed there and worked all winter, but not so much a month. But I wants to go shopping anyway.
And I was just outside of Circle. That was near to Circle. That farm was not very far from Circle.
It was right at Birch Creek, about 10 miles out. And you have a ferry there, you have a little boat, and people come in out, you go across and get them. 25 cents, you take them over. If I was around, I'd be around. And then when the wagons come, you're taking the supplies out to the creeks, you get so much for them. You have a big ferry. You have the same in Dawson, you know. You just work that ferry business and go and get them. And in the summer, if there's not much water, these fellas go across with the wagons and don't pay nothing. Well, they don't have to get on the ferry. That was about 10 miles out there.
Well, when you were trapping, when you first went up the Porcupine River, Fred was the oldest of the group.
Yeah.
Pretty much the
leader. I would call him old Fred, but he wasn't old, remember. He was 30 maybe.
Well, he had more experience.
He said he had. He'd been to Alaska before and Fred knew everything, but he just didn't know nothing. While he was in Whitehorse, he worked around the roadhouse there and was supposed to know how to make bread. And none of us knew about that. I told you about Scotty almost dying, you know, if Anthony hadn't come up there. He didn't know nothing. I never learned nothing.
Well, didn't Fred teach you how to hunt?
Oh boy, yes. He teaches how to do everything. Fred, he was a man that never learned and was lazy to start with. But he never learned and he couldn't make a living there. So he had to quit and well, he come down to the... They kept him in the hospital there. He must have lived there for 3 years. Just nothing, only sing a few songs for them once in a while. He was a good singer, a good entertainer. I bought a book for him and he learned all these songs, you know. What you're singing them real on the radio. He was a good singer and he learned a lot of nice songs.
Well, didn't he teach you how to hunt caribou?
Oh, boy. No, I know about that caribou. We were supposed to be following these tracks, you know. Reading, of course, we never seen anything like that. I couldn't have hit them anyway. I never fired a gun. Never shot a gun in my life. We're going along and we thought these tracks was the caribou, we figure, till we come to some railing, it was pretty low, and they gone under there. So we found somebody told us they were rabbits. We didn't know of nothing. I don't know, you know an awful lot more yet. Yeah. Lots of fun anyway. Frank Foster here, the nicest man as was ever born, they said. the mole was, there wasn't a more mole to get people like the nicest man has ever lived, I think. And he was a bootleg Ben there, and he couldn't make a living there, and had to move. You're not running this thing now?
No.
It was going up that time, but Frank went there and built a new cabin. And Frank worked for McEnroy here, the storekeeper. I went up there shopping and shopped. Frank could not make a living, that's all, in a good country. And everybody, we used to stop there coming down, everybody would show Frank anything he wanted, go and show him, but Frank just never learned. That's all. Oh, is he, you? Yeah, he would never learn. And he never couldn't make a living there, he couldn't pay, he never took his citizen papers out. That's another, that Anthony, Harry Anthony stayed here a long time, he was one of the men that, you know, come over to us as we was going up. They never took a citizen paper. They're supposed to pay $100 a year for that. I paid for 3 years. But Frank couldn't make a living. I don't know whether he paid or somebody paid it for him. I'd see his sets as I was going up, and it's no wonder he don't catch nothing. But everybody was willing to learn him because he was so nice. And Rube Mason finally took him over on the Canadian side, where Rube used to shop, and Frank got sick and went over to the hospital and died in at the last of Frank. But he couldn't, the more intelligent man was never born. And he couldn't learn to trap to make a living. And it don't take much to make a living. If you get the meat and the fish, see what else does it take? Meat and fish, and it don't take much else. And he couldn't make a living. Anthony was something the same. There's two bright people. Harry never made nothing here. This don't go any further now.
Promise?
So help me.
So help me.
Well, I was in Fairbanks at the trial. There's a trial over there, and I set my traps out there in November, and I want to come back and see them. And also being for Christmas in Fort Yukon. So, I got a mandolin over with another lady, sure, two lessons to learn. I wanted to be a musician. And then this Fred and the other people went over, they stayed there. One was Slim Bain and Fred, they were good singers. And they'd be in this loon there singing, and having a better time than we've had here. But anyway, I come back by myself. And I come to Fort Yukon, and I got all ready for going next day, you know, loaded up. And Dick Martin, he come down and he said, Ellen wants to get married to you. Well, I thought about it, I said, I hope I never talk anyway. Well, I knew Ellen all right, we'd been around a little together, danced a little together, but I wasn't thinking about no marriage. Anyway, I said, I'll go up and talk to him. And you get tired of being out in the woods by yourself, too, to tell you the truth. I wouldn't have stayed out in the woods anyway. I wouldn't have stayed if I wasn't a woman there. So I went up and talked to the old man, and he figured what kind of a hunter was. Well, I couldn't boost myself as a hunter. Anyway, I said, I will get married as long as you don't have to go to church. So we went to William Lulu's house and got married. And all I had was four dogs, you know, and a trail to break up there. That was a 75 miles to walk with four dogs. And the trail to... Oh no, wait a minute. Curtis had just come down, a man called Curtis. And I met him, you know, went down to him in the labor toboggan, and he said, "Oh, the woman," and I said, "I'm just taking up the shoe house." He didn't know till he got to town as we were married. But it was all right. Ellen was good. We got along fine. I wouldn't want anything better. Good work, and we got along fine. But it was, you know, no big love marriage, nothing like that, but they got along. It's better than sleeping with old bread anyhow. And we got along fine, and everything went good. And no regrets by any means. Well, if you see the place he's buried now, you see now the nicest place in town. Well, that's how I got married. You get married that way?
Never know. Are you going trapping?
Well, I might come down and suggest sometime. You never know. Everything when somebody suggests something, but you've nothing to lose on none of them occasions. Nothing to lose.
It seems that it always worked out very well. It always seemed to work out very well.
Well, I'm going to tell you, God looks after me. I didn't used to think so, but now I think he does. And he's had a job sometimes too. Well, they didn't always keep the straight and narrow path. There were lots of things that we're sorry for, but it's all gone, and you enjoyed yourself doing it. But nobody else does, do they? Nobody else does everything is really. But you don't, too.
That's
you've
right.
Done some things you've
said.
I bet lots of them, haven't you? Yeah.
That's right.
But everything, as you say, everything turned out right. It looks like I was naturally cut out for leaving a big city and didn't know nothing and just pleasure bend. All I was looking for was fun. And then come out here to nothing and make a success of it, too. I think I was the only one, me and Peterson, has ever quit without looking for a pension. All the other old timers, they get through, you know, and right off to a pension. They don't have nothing. Well, I thought if I can't make something, I'll go out and try something else. It's just a matter of working, and, well, you've got to have some idea about things and being the kind of a country. But I think I was a little different than other people. The kind of a kinky being, it's not a good one, but I like to work. And there's not many people who do that. That's a kind of a, it's worked all right, but somewhere I like to work, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's coming good, you know, because in our trapping, you get what you work for, see. If you don't work, well, Fred, my partner, he don't make nothing. Well, here's an illustration. We go out sometime to a camp, you know, we get home, sometime after dinner, and no smoke, and we say, well, old Fred's out something, and he hasn't got up yet. He's in bed, but we've gone and taken in a day's trap line. And then they'd take in little places, and well, I never got satisfied with the country I had. I always wanted more. We built 11 cabins there. Now Jimmy, I love Jimmy, he traps from home cabin, doing well enough. Well, I had 11 of them. It took me 2 weeks to go around, over 200 miles of trail. Well, you've got to have well. What are you going to do? I wanted to make something. I didn't want to live on charity or relief. Peterson's the same. He was a worker, was Pete. I guess we were the only two who's ever made anything. And that was with work. The other fellows had the same opportunity. And the natives, they had to. But in that book, it tells you where we was lucky. I was lucky all the time. We get at Schumann House, see? And it mentions in that book, I mentioned it to this man, that how good the Schumann people was. There was good people, was the good natives, and as the book says, it showed me everything I knew about trapping. There was good neighbors. I go hunting with them. Just they draw me trap lines, draw me short maps in different places. And lucky again too, so many. Now here's an illustration that thing's working. I'm a poem. Now then, there's a man, old native, come down to Schumann House. He's called Henry Millspeak. And the fishing's about through on the Porcupine, it's freezing up there. And they know about there's a spawning hole in Salmon River, a regular fish, you can see the fish in there. And Henry was the only one who knew the trail. So he was taking these natives over, and I went with them, of course, I went any place they went. And I went over there, and I was told him before, we were going up this to Jimmy Carroll's place, and John Herbert was leading, and he'd come along, and he must have been his string across there, and he just hit it, and there was a gun set for Bear there, full of buckshot. Of course, I wouldn't have gone there. See, I wouldn't know the way, so there was no danger of me getting into it. Jimmy Carroll sets that gun, but he's not looking for anybody. The river's froze, and nobody never come from Porcupine before, so they couldn't blame him. Maybe he was setting it for Bear. So we fished there, and well, here's the thing. It's 30 miles over there. We get back home. Well, they don't want that trail. All they went for fishing. There's 30 miles of trail for me without cutting the stick. See? Then another time, they go from Schumann House with an idea to go from Schumann House away back and go up the river to John Herbert's place, 30 miles up there. He was going to make a round trip there. And I went with them, of course. I remember Joe set a trap or two for me on the way, and coming back, I was late, but Joe did have nothing. And they went there on the Shandar Trail, we call it, and they come back and they decide not to go up there. So, trail's mine. Nobody's using it. And then they draw, that's a long room, maybe a day and a half out, and they draw the rest of the trail there. It's a trail that was used by the fishing people over to Chandler. There's a trail all the way. And next time they come along, they're going up in the hills hunting up there. So I went with them, of course, as usual. We shot caribou there, and I get my share of the caribou, and I have the trail up the hill, the 100 mile up there, without cutting a stick. So all I got my trail was go out here to Salmon River with this old William Millspeak, 30 miles. Chandler, we were at 3 days. Sam said one time, why wouldn't we cut from there to make a round trip and backtracking? And that's a poor business, backtracking. See, it takes you 2 days for that one trip. So Sam and I went, and I remember, I don't think I'd have done it myself. We go and cut the trail, it was 50 miles. Cut the trail there, and Mitch made an 8-day round trip. And we didn't care if there was anything in that country, as long as it was the round trip, and it was a good marking country. I get 100 marking in one winter. We didn't know that. See, that's what I say about lucky. Didn't know a thing about it, just making the connection. And there's the man, the best of good, well, I don't know any better. Good marking country. And we built two cabins there too. And Sam, he didn't want to come over my trail to Salmon River to make that. So in the spring he said, well, he don't want to bother with it. I think he wanted about $18 for it, and he left some traps there and two cabins built and a 50-mile trail. So I threw whatever he wanted, I gave it to him. But here, he got well paid for that one time, and I was glad too. I had, I tell you, 2 weeks trail there, and it was a heavy snow this time in spring, and I have to make trail. And it's a long way to make too much. So I told Sam, you use that shanty, he knew it because he helped me cut it. I said, you use that and you take whatever you get there. And he used that, and he got 24 Martin at $40 each. So I was glad he got that, because he got nothing out of the trail cutting, and he gave me a good shrapnel. But he got 24 Martin and sold them for $40, so he did get paid for it, didn't he? I was glad he did too. Well, I got 100 that time, and we were getting about 20 on a trip, and so Sam got something out of it, for which I was, well, I it was all right. So that's where I get to that country without doing much work. And that Chandelier Trail, I find it again. I go along a way, and that goes right over to Salmon River. So I went over one time there, and I come to somebody built a new cabin there, a nice new cabin, and was cash up there, and he'd quit, and in the wood, there was enough wood to last me all winter, books, and just a home cabin. And I thought, this is good for the winter. I went up the river, if there's any foot, and there was just a fox track, so I couldn't go again. I had to go back home. But there's another. As I tell you, these people think they get too far out in the country. Further they go, and they think they get in the further, but they run out of timber. I don't know if you put everything on the ears. But I tell you what, this a man called Bishop went up there, way to Roop's cabin, way over 300 miles up Salmon River, and that's a real job going up Salmon River. So I went up there, and we go to this cabin I tell you about, what I was just telling you about, and Jimmy Carr will meet me there. He come up Salmon River, I meet Jimmy there, and there's a man called Bishop, Big Bish went from there, and he went up to Roof, way up Salmon River. And he would come down to this place, he'd seen my sex there, and one time he put a gunny sack there and a note in it. I didn't know where he was, to make an arrangement that he'd see me the next trip. He'd come to our cabin, way up Salmon there. And Jimmy and me would meet there, and we went this time, and he's got a caribou, a nice big fat caribou up there for us, for me and Jimmy. Well, he left a note what time I should meet him, what time we'd be there. So I was there this time. It was in March, it was getting about through the trapping time, and Bishop, that's the first time I met him, see? And he come along, and of course his hair was down on his shoulders, you know, he had that haircut, you know, from leaving Fort Yukon. The Bish looked well, you know, he was asking questions and answering them at the same time. Well, how were you getting along? Well, pretty good. And that was a big link run that time. And of course, how many do you get? Well, I said, I got 240 up to that time. And he didn't get the 200, see? He said, 40 link? My goodness, he says. There must be a lot of link. I said, no, 240. But it took a long time for it to come in, because he hadn't got any, he hadn't got one. I tell you, it's too far out. All he got is a few Wolverine and not much of that either. And that was another thing about Bish. He was telling me what a hard time he had. He got this Wolverine, he's somewhere a little out, and what a hard time he had to carry it back home. And you know, the biggest you ever get is 40 pounds, and this man's 250 pounds. But anyway, from that cabin to my third cabin, I told him, I'll leave these things, my tent and everything, set for you. And there's dog feed there too when you want to come, because I'm going to go to town now. I'll leave this for you. And Bish used that country and made a grubstake on it. He got quite a few leaves because there was lots of them. And brought my tent and traps down to town. So they're helping out anyway. They go too far, they go out of timber. They no lakes for rats or nothing else. So they just don't get nothing. But the only thing I remember about it, and Stephenson was here. He went up, he was sick, you know, on the river. That's another thing as was a lousy thing. They come to my place, you know, Doc Burke, and he had three men with dog teams there. And they come to my place, and from the camp at Schumann House, I'm in a bend there, and Schumann House is a cook there. Come to my place and ask me for that fish. Well, I said, yes, all you want. I had lots of fish. And I'll pay you just what you would have to pay in Port Yukon. And that's 3 days on the way. And I took a load of fish from them and went to the next camp with them too. He was going up for Steppens and he was supposed to be sick. He was sick too, not supposed to be. And, you know, this Archdeacon stuck. Fred was down at Schumann House one time and Stuck was travelling there, and he was saying that I'd been stinging them men, I'd been charging them too much for that fish. He was saying some hard things, that he didn't like me because I'd been charging them. I didn't charge them nothing, only what they get in Fort Yukon. That's 3 days on the way, and I hauled about six, just a full load of fish a day for them. And Stuck's talking like that. That's why I didn't like Stuck. He just a windbag, Stuck was. Well, anyway, Steffens, and I did read one of his books, and I don't know, he's just an average-sized man. I don't know, nothing out of the ordinary anyway. He stayed here for a while. He was sick. Well, in his book, here's one of the things he said that I always remember, the only one. They'd gone 30 miles over Niggeridge. They'd had a hard time getting there. 30 miles traveling over Niggeridge, and that's hard walking. And they killed some caribou there. And then they got they had some gunny sacks. Why they had them there, I don't know. But they filled these gunny sacks and packed them home that night. So they walked 30 miles over this gunny head, this nigger edge, which is hard walking. And then they filled these sacks and packed them home the same night, 60 miles. If he lies about that, he lies about other things. Yeah, because it might be possible, but... very not probable. I know what that packing, 30 miles walking in a good trail, and to walk over Niggeridge, well, the big chunks of grass, you know, and then there'll be a hole there. It's been walking in them. You wait on top of one of them slides. It's been walking these Niggeridge, and they've gone 30 miles hunting caribou, and then got a load of filled these sacks and packed it back to the camp, 60 miles. No. Well, that's all I read. I read one of his books. That's all. He stayed there a while, and over a year, a week in the summer, when he come down, his boys brought him down. Place in the bend. Instead of you come to Schumann House and you make a short cut across to the river again, see? Where ours is in, you see, they wouldn't come up here. Mm-hmm. Schumann House is here, they come up the trail to Schumann House and go across and make a 7 mile cut. So they never come to our place. There must be a lot of oil around this country. He said he'd been making make tea, you know, on the gravel bar there, and he'd blow up and blow his can off at his feet and off. There must have been a lot of oil pretty close in them rocks, you know. Yeah, he was telling me that. Blow this, shut up.